This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Good stuff coming your way today. Paul Moyer will join us as he does every week. He'll be here at 3 o'clock today. We got the professor at 4. And then our own personal ray of sunshine, John Morosi, at 5 o'clock, Dave. So another stellar show.
You know, yesterday was awesome. And today is going to be even more awesome.
Awesomer.
Exactly. Paul Moyer, yeah, we'll see how far you go with your introduction. Pretty soon it's going to be half the interview. We'll see if Paul gives you a treat.
Yeah, if I can just wag my tail a little bit more. I'm a good boy. He loves it. He loves it. He's always a good conversation. And a lot of good feedback from our conversation with Mitch Haniger yesterday. A lot of people on Twitter sending messages. Yeah. If you guys missed that, really, I mean, first of all, Mitch rarely does media. You just don't hear from him much. You'll catch him on the field post game every once in a while, you know, for that, what, minute and a half perhaps, but he rarely does me. And he said as much in the interview that, you know, hey, often they'll ask questions and they'll only use certain answers and it's out of context. So he seems a little leery of doing media, which that's fine. I get it if you've been burned, but cool to spend. We spent, what, 20 minutes with him talking, and he's just a really thoughtful, insightful guy.
He really is, and thoughtful, I think, is a good way to describe him. And you just get more out of him when you talk to him. It's more about the kind of person that he is. You know, I would say this, though. I mean, he's right, especially all the stuff we're talking about the media with Albert Breer. And I'm not saying they're bad journalists. I'm just saying that, you know, they're trying to get content out there. And so, you know, like, and I'll make an example or kind of a an example of how, like, whenever I do my nerdy stat dives, you know, and I send it to you guys, whether it's, you know, finding out how the Seahawks are doing in the draft or, you know, do penalties really matter and things like that, I always go in it going, I just want, you know, the truth. I want to know, you know, if the numbers tell a story. I don't care which way it tells the story. I just want to know what the truth is.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that's, you know, a lot of people go in and say, hey, I'm going to prove that, you know, turnovers really, you know, don't matter or whatever. And you can go and try to find ways to make that so. I think that it's kind of a parallel with, you know, for a lot of reporters will go into an interview and say, I want to get this out of, you know, somebody like Mitch Haniger.
Right.
And, you know, so then all the good stuff that he says maybe gets left. And I'm not accusing anybody directly, but I think, you know, you said he got burned a couple times. I think that's a lot of times what people do. They go in saying, hey.
I'm assuming he did because he's leery. I don't know that he did, but he kind of said as
I'm
much.
Sorry. I mean, you know, if that is really the case of whether, you know, what happened with him or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think him being able to write that thing, you know, in the Players Tribune, I think it really helped him. I feel like that's kind of, you know, since he wrote that, that he's kind of figured it out, you know, figured out what he wants to say and what message he wants to get out there.
Yeah, it just really, really good conversation. It was just nice to talk some baseball and just, you know, we're very Seahawks heavy, which it's football season, of course, and we'll continue with that. But, man, just last year was so much fun, and he talked about that and just talked about the final games where he was just on a tear. Just a lot of good stuff. So if you guys missed that conversation, it's available for you on the podcast page at 710sports.com. You can just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It's right there. I tweeted out the links, both our accounts. So if you're on Twitter, at Bob Stelton or at Wyman and Bob, the links are up there. So just a lot of cool reaction. Appreciate everybody that took the time to listen to it and respond to it on Twitter and everything. Some good stuff.
Yeah, and also, you know, we're talking about the lockout and everything, just real quick with baseball, that it wasn't just, I mean, the Mariners certainly delivered, and it was like nightly, it was like if there was a game, wasn't a game, like on those afternoon games, and you had to go home and there wasn't a game on, you were just so disappointed. So that was so much fun and all the storylines that came from that, but also just Major League Baseball. You know, remember all the no-hitters early on, and then the whole thing about the substances with the, you know, the baseball, and then there was the proposals to, you know, to change. And I just thought, you know, the Astros and them getting off with the shortened year and no crowds. And there were so many storylines in baseball. And that's why, you know, we've talked about it. We just hate to see that momentum killed with some kind of a, you know, the lockout.
Yeah, let's hope it comes to an end soon and we don't lose any spring training, no regular season. It's just business as usual. And then we can talk about where all the big guys are going to land. Where's Chris Bryant? Is Chris Bryant going to be a Mariner? Is it going to be Trevor Story? Where's Carlos Correa going to go? Still a lot of big names floating around out there without a home. So we will certainly get into that. But you brought up Albert Breer. He like every other national football journalist, insider, whatever you want to call him, is in on what's going on with the Seahawks, and more specifically, Russell Wilson. So he was Russell, for those that don't know, he's got 2 years left on his deal. And he'll make $37 million in 2022, $40 million in 23. And then he's potentially moving on, or they potentially look at a restructure or an extension to spread the money out. We'll see. I doubt they're going to pay $40 million in 2023. So you figure something will happen there in the way of managing that contract. But Albert Breer, in cut number one here, says, in his opinion, it's likely his last deal with the Seahawks.
I think the hedging from Russ's camp is not a great sign. Now, we'll see if they can work something out. But, you know, there's been an acknowledgement for a while that this could be the last contract he'll do with the team.
Last contract he'll do with the team. And then one more. Feels like Russ and you know, just the connection with the Seahawks could end up being like Matt Stafford and the Lions.
It wouldn't shock me at all if a couple of weeks from now we're sitting here and, you know, he's sort of, you know, found a way to come to the same sort of agreement that the Lions came to with Matthew Stafford last year to trade him.
So he's offering his opinion. You know, he's not saying, hey, sources are telling me this. He's going off what he's heard these guys say. That's the conclusion he's come to. But, you know, we go with the hypotheticals here sometimes. So just say hypothetically he's right. Let's just say it's going to be the last deal that he signs. There's not going to be an extension. They're not going to rework the final year of the deal. If you're the Seahawks, what do? To me, you've got two options. You go for it in these 2 years. You say, we are going to surround him with talent. We are going to absolutely try to attack while this Super Bowl window is open. We feel like we've got the pieces. Or we're going to move him now because his value is never going to be higher. We'll try to move him to one of the, you know, destinations that he approves of because he's got a no-trade clause. So you can't just say, well, we're shipping you to the Jets or we're going to ship you to Cleveland or wherever. It's he's got a say in it. So which way do you go if you're Pete and John Schneider here? If just we're playing out the hypothetical that it's true, last deal.
I think that the playoffs made it terribly obvious how valuable. And, you know, we've been saying this for a long time. Like Clayton's probably, you know, said it 20 times a year or a season where we'll be talking about how it's a quarterback-driven league. Mm-hmm. But it's not just a quarterback-driven league. It's a good franchise quarterback-driven league. And you see what happens when, number one, you don't have a good franchise quarterback. And, you know, and again, I think that Garoppolo, like you like to say, they won in spite of Jimmy Garoppolo, mm-hmm. you know, but I mean, he missed passes all over the place, but they moved on. But, you know, you see what happens, not only that, but like when your franchise quarterback does not play well, Kyler Murray and Dak Prescott. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just so valuable to have that. And I go back to, you know, what a Seahawk executive said, why in the hell would we trade Russell Wilson? Why would we do that? So, and, you know, look, Russ has, by my count, 9 playoff wins, I think I just saw, because, you know, I'm always talking about how they go to the playoffs every year, and which I would still say, look, you in 12 years, 9 shots at it, I mean, every time you get in, or I'm sorry, 10 years, then it's, you know, you got a chance to win. So, yeah, it just, to me, I think it's become more and more clear that you absolutely do not move on past Russell. And really, especially that last game against Arizona, I mean, he wasn't incredibly great, but played pretty well and got the team, got the running game going and everything. I just feel like he's the right guy. He's the right franchise quarterback. So, you know, I would wait till the very bitter end if I'm the Seahawks and just say, hey, look, We're going to try to win here, and obviously, and you're going to try to make some moves in the offseason that support Russ. I thought they did that last year. But, you know, him getting hurt and the way the defense played at times was, I think, the killer. So, no, you don't move on from him until you absolutely have to, or until he just stops performing, which I don't see. You know, the worst we've seen of Russ is after that finger injury.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird position, and again, we're just taking what Albert Breer said and just playing the hypothetical. I don't know if he's right or not. It sounded like it's more his opinion on how he reads the situation, and maybe he does end up being right. We don't know. But just playing that out, the hypothetical, what would you do? And you guys can text in 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Just play along with us. Let's pretend Albert Breer is right. There will be no new deal for Russell Wilson. He'll not sign an extension. There'll be no reworking of the deal. If you're the Seahawks, you guys are in charge, what do you do? Do you go for it? You got 2 years, two more seasons. Do you absolutely go for it and say we're going to capitalize on having a franchise quarterback who's still pretty darn close to his prime? He's 33 years old. Or do you say, well, he's never going to have more value than he's got now, and we're going to clean up on draft picks. We're going to get as much in return as we possibly can right now, which you know is going to set your franchise back. You're not going to win with Geno Smith. You're not going to win with a backup. If you trade him for, you know, what are some of the trades we've seen proposed out there? You know, whether it's you're getting Teddy Bridgewater, you're getting, you know, some of these other guys, even Derek Carr, who you and I both like, you're taking a step back. You're going to take a step back. So it's kind of an interesting thought or an interesting position to be in if you are Pete and John, and if, in fact, that were the case. I get the appeal of both sides of it. I think, for me personally, I'm the GM, I'm going for it. Because you say it all the time, it's hard to win in this league, much less win a title. You know, just winning a game on Sunday is a tough thing to do. You got an opportunity to perhaps bank another Super Bowl win, you do it. If you believe you're that close, and you can't do it without him, you got to go for it, don't you? I understand the draft picks, you know, especially if you're getting draft picks this year and you think you're going to draft your future quarterback this year. By all accounts, I was watching Mel Kiper yesterday and Todd McShay and all these people talk about how bad the quarterback draft is this year. How I think they're in their mock drafts. I think the first quarterback they got coming off the board is at like number 11, number 10, number 11, something like that.
Yeah.
This isn't the year. It doesn't feel like the year you find your future in the draft. Maybe you stumble upon another third rounder the way you did with him. How often does that happen? How likely is that to happen?
Yeah, it's not. And not only that, the first round, high first round picks that we talked about from this year, the best one was Mac Jones. Was he the last one drafted?
Of the big group, yeah. I mean, yeah. Trey Lance went ahead of him, Fields, Wilson, Lawrence, they all went ahead of him.
Yeah, and we'll see how those guys work out. I mean, I think we've talked about maybe two of them will be a good, you know, one of those good quarterbacks. I'm not even talking about, you know, the top 25%. I mean, I'm just saying make it as a starter. So, you know, look what happened with Wentz and Goff in 2017. I mean, Goff, you know, both of them are good quarterbacks, but they're not great. They're not there. I mean, the Rams weren't in the Super Bowl because of Jared Goff.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, kind of the same. I think Wentz played well when he got hurt, but then, you know, the year they went to the Super Bowl and won it. But, yeah, so, I mean, how would that be, by the way, really quick? If you're Carson Wentz and you won a Super Bowl, but you were on the sidelines, I mean, you'd be like, yeah, I got a lot of those wins for us, but I didn't get to actually play in the playoffs.
I helped get us here.
Yeah.
He's kind of a weird case because he had that season where he was, you know, kind of the leader of the pack in terms of MVP and just having this tremendous season. Then he gets hurt. And then we see him this year. You see he's just kind of he can be great at times. To me, that's what separates a good quarterback from the elite is, yeah, the good quarterbacks, and there are plenty of them in the league, they can put on a show at times. They can have a really dynamic day out there. Right. But then they're just as likely to go out there and stink the joint up. And not that Aaron Rodgers doesn't ever have a bad day, or Russell or Brady. They all have their bad moments. Mahomes started the season terribly this year. But the consistency, to me, is what the true separation is. Yeah, there's arm talent, Dave. There's
you know, does the arm have his own agent, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, there are guys that obviously have cannon arms versus other guys are more mobile than other guys, but it's just that consistency. You pretty much know what you're getting week in, week out with these guys. Whereas you get the other guy, the next rung of quarterbacks can be dynamic, but they can really, there's an inconsistency to that greatness. And that to me is the separator there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know how I feel about the draft. I mean, you talked about Major League Baseball being a big crapshoot, and you're right. I mean, as far as the pool that you're getting the players from, it's like nation or worldwide.
Yeah.
Right. But in the NFL, I just think the NFL is it's the hardest. It might be the hardest position in, you know, we talked about in all of sports to master. And then, you know, coming out of college, some guys just don't. They're not pro football players. They're really good college football players for whatever reason. I don't even know what that element is. You know, I don't know if it's – I think a lot of it is playing through pain. A lot of it is how serious you take it. But, I mean, yeah, it's so hard to find that. So when you start talking about draft choices, I'm like, look, you know, we talked about this with the big three. And how, you know, Pete, John, and Russ, and kind of after discussing it for a few days, I drew the conclusion that it would have been an incredibly drastic move to move on from Pete Carroll. Based on what he's done here, it's that times two with Russell Wilson. It would be an incredibly drastic move. So, and especially if you looked around and, you know, there was no chance of getting a guy like Dwayne Brown back. You know, you didn't have anybody on your offensive line. You didn't have two of that are arguably the best tandem receivers in the NFL. You know, if you didn't have the talent that you had on defense, okay, then maybe, yeah, Russ is out of place here. They're going to have to, you know, they're closer to a teardown, get rid of Russ. But it's not the case. It really isn't. And I know 7-10 is just shocking for people, but I just don't think that I think you got to stay the course.
Yeah, I'm that's where I'm at. I'm going for it. I'm going unless behind closed doors they feel like, you know what, we're not that close. We need too much help. We need they identify too many dead spots, if you will. All right, that's different. It depends on their evaluation of their roster and how truly convinced they are that they are that close. And if they are convinced, you got to keep him.
Yeah.
You got to, because the opportunities just don't come that frequently. And right. And when it's there, you got to snatch it, because you may be, once he's gone, you may be on a perennial search for your future quarterback. You may have stopgap guys that are, yeah, he wasn't bad. He was okay for a couple of years, but landing that guy, the guy, it's you may have another 10-year gap before you find that guy. You have no idea.
Yeah, well, and look at Pete and his age and everything and what his contract is. I mean, you might get a guy that maybe has a rookie year like Russ did, and you're, like, really hoping that he takes the next step, and he just doesn't. And you waste a half a year, half of the season waiting for that guy to develop, and it's like, okay, we just found out that, you know, something happened where you're like, okay, he's not the guy. He's not our guy. Now we got to start over again. Another 2 years, unless you go the Matthew Stafford route, but
hey, Bob, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to Tampa. So I was going to say, I was kind of had a little smile on my face there. You still have your Christmas tree up.
I do. Yes.
I see behind you on your ceiling how you've got the flashing thing.
The flashing lights. Yeah.
One to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a hard time letting go.
You got to let go, Bob.
I have a hard time, Dave. Here's another bold admission. I was listening to the Carpenters' Christmas CD night before last.
Yeah. You started crying?
No, just enjoying it, just going, the voice of an angel. The voice of an angel, Karen Carpenter. Yeah. People texting in, we'll try to get to some over your text as we go on through the show. Seahawks weren't in the Super Bowl because of Russ, says the 509. You know what? You guys got to stop that. You really do. You really got to stop that, because you're not being honest. If you don't like Russ, that's fine. I'm not saying he's the sole reason they were in the Super Bowl, because he wasn't. But there wasn't one sole reason. It wasn't just the defense. You got to be able to score points. It wasn't just Marshawn. You got to have an offensive line and the threat of a passing attack. And Russell Wilson in those years, in the 2 years they went to the Super Bowl, he you want to look at his passing stats. He was 26 touchdowns, 9 picks 1 year. It threw for over 3,300 yards, 63% completion, 101.2 quarterback rating. He also ran for 539 yards in 2013, 849 yards the following year, the 2 years they went to the Super Bowl. He was efficient. Was he throwing for 40 touchdowns? No. But he's thrown for over 3,000 yards. His touchdown to interception ratio was spectacular, and he was running the ball all over the place. So stop with it. They got there in spite of him, or he rode everybody's coattails to the Super Bowl. That's just ignorant. I'm sorry. With all due respect to the texter, I know you probably don't like him, but you got to stop that stuff. That he was like just a passenger on the train that was being driven by everybody but him. That doesn't make any sense.
I agree. And the thing you have to do, you have to go, okay, compared to what, you know, or where are you going to find somebody to start over here with Russ, unless you trade for one of those quarterbacks does anybody want to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo?
No.
That's without breaking the bank. That's the kind of quarterback that can, you know, that you could probably get.
He'd be a stopgap. He'd be a guy what I was just talking about. He can have those moments where he looks really good and plays well, plays within himself, but then he'll make that crucial mistake. The consistency isn't there. It's just, there's a difference. It's just a different level.
It's a difference.
It's a difference. Yeah. We got to, in honor of our guest today, we got to make sure we get this right. Difference in organic. All right. Let's take two.
Well, there's another name that's emerged as a defensive coordinator candidate, Joe Witt Jr. We'll talk about him more coming up at 2:30. But an interesting reason why he might be available, a few Cowboys reporters have noted that the team might be looking at bringing Mike Zimmer back if Dan Quinn is hired as a head coach.
So, yeah, this is a guy that has not been a defensive coordinator, and I sent you guys a story last night. I don't know much about Joe Witt Jr. other than his connection to Dan Quinn. So, I don't know. Is that enough to get people excited? Is it enough? Obviously, it's enough to get Pete curious, and maybe Dan Quinn has talked to him about him. Maybe he's an up-and-comer. So, it's hard to tell, but obviously they have enough interest to want to speak with him.
Okay. Now, did they specifically say we are interviewing him as a defensive coordinator?
I believe that's what it said in that article.
Okay.
I don't think those words, but I think there's an interest in speaking with him for that position.
Yeah, and they might be, but also he might end up being your pass game coordinator because that's what he's been since 2018, and I was just looking.
He's going to have to explain what that is.
Yeah, exactly. So he's been that with Green Bay, Cleveland. We'll talk about it, like you said, later. Atlanta and then Dallas last year. And there's some good numbers there, some bad numbers. So, you know, maybe they go ahead and interview him as the defensive coordinator, but also keep him in mind in case, you know. But I would think that the new D coordinator, whoever he is going to want to, you know, pick his own guys.
Well, this was just kind of a funny saga, and it's officially come to an end. MLB has officially nixed the Rays' proposal. They wanted to play half of their home games in Tampa and half in Montreal. And a lot of people thought the Rays just wanted to do this to try to get a new ballpark built for a while, and it seemed to be a move geared toward forcing Tampa to build them one. But MLB today said, no, you can't play half the season in one city and half in another.
Good. It's a dumb idea. Stupid.
I think so too.
I mean, it's cool, the idea of having baseball in Montreal again. You know, they haven't been there since the Expos in the 90s. But the idea of, hey, we're going to be the Tampa Bay Rays who play, you know, half of our season, half of our home games in Montreal. That's lame.
It's not fair to the fans.
It's not. I know they don't have great attendance. And some of that, you know, I don't know how much has to do with the building. I don't really know the area where it's located, if it's good or bad. But That building is garbage. They do need a new stadium out there. But the idea of splitting your season in half like that, lame.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the only places, you would know better than me, Bob, but where sometimes the pop-ups or the home runs will hit the ceiling.
Yeah, hit the catwalk.
Yeah, the catwalk. And then also, you know, you get the... So there's that. I don't know if that's entertaining to people. It seems like it's one of my least favorite... When they're playing at Tampa, it's one of my least favorite games to watch.
Yeah,
it's a dead building.
It's a dead building.
Only thing that made it great was when Aaron Goldsmith said, "We've got a floater."
Yeah.
That was the only thing redeeming about
that. That's a sad statement about how bad that building is. Great call, but the fact that it's an opposing team's call that made it great tells you about it. All right. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Well, we just mentioned him, and we'll take a closer look at Joe Witt Jr. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, our buddy Paul Moyer will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that conversation. I'm sure he's got a thought or two on the search for a defensive coordinator, and I don't know if he knows much about Joe Witt Jr. or not, but we can... ask him about it. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino, by the way. But that was a story, in case you just tuned in, we touched on it briefly in the opening segment, that another defensive coordinator candidate has been identified, a potential, I should say, and Joe Witt Jr., another guy who's never been a defensive coordinator. He's the Cowboys defensive passing game coordinator and secondary coach. He's 43 years old. He was in Atlanta with Dan Quinn in 2020. It's his first year with the Cowboys this season. Now, they're 28th in points allowed in 2020. They're 7th this season, so they made a huge improvement. How much does that have to do with him in particular? I don't know. We're kind of – I mean, these guys aren't nearly as notable or as well-known as head coaches, right? We've got an idea of track records with a lot of these head coaches and where they've been. And, oh, this guy, when he was here, he did this and he was great, or he wasn't great. You start getting into coordinators, you're getting deep in the weeds. It's hard to have, you know, a lot of working knowledge with what they've done and how responsible they are for that turnaround. Is that note says here, I mean, 28th in points in 2020, 7th this season. Sure, he's part of it, but how big a part of it? Not sure.
Yeah, I was looking at Dallas and some of the numbers. The one thing you would say is that they were number one in takeaways. They had 6 pick sixes.
Well, I think Trevon Diggs had, 11 interceptions this year?
Yeah, and he had 2 of them were pick sixes. So, you know, you can put that. But by the way, the passing coordinator, so usually you have position coaches, right?
Right.
But when it's pass, anytime, like he's not talking to the D lineman unless they're dropping into pass. But, you know, he's talking to both linebackers and defensive backs. So, you know, the as far as coverage goes, you know, they have separate meetings, I think, where he's the guy that coordinates, you know, the linebacker drops with the defensive back drops. You're not just coaching one position. You're coaching a concept.
Anybody basically who's in coverage.
Yeah, exactly. Which, sadly, for the Seahawks, that would be defensive linemen.
That would include just about everybody. Al Woods and Puna Ford are sitting in that meeting.
No, I'm terrible. I shouldn't be saying that. But it just was my pet peeve. It was my pet peeve.
I think it was valid. I think it was valid because it never seemed to work. It never seemed to fool anybody. So
yeah. But, you know, again, like I said in the prior segment, I think – yeah, you interview him maybe as the defensive coordinator, and I don't know if they have to declare who, you know, we're interviewing him for. Maybe he's just one of these guys that, you know, I was looking at, he played, I think he walked on at Auburn and as a wide receiver, and then he earned a scholarship. So, and then he ended up having an injury that ended his playing career. But he was a student assistant with the receivers, a student assistant coach, 2000 to 2001. I kind of helped with the linebackers in 1985. We had some young kids that came in. One was Arnie Palour, one of the Palour brothers. Arnie was a linebacker, and so I kind of helped, you know, when I was injured that year and redshirted. So it sounds like that's how he got started. But then, you know, I went to the Citadel, Louisville. But Atlanta in 2007 was his first time in the NFL. So he's been around, and he's been a defensive pass coordinator for Green Bay, Cleveland, Atlanta, and Dallas. And it's like 2018, he was in Green Bay, 19 in Cleveland, 20 in Atlanta. So he's moved around. And, you know, he had some good years in Cleveland in 2019. Now, again, I mean, he's a guy that probably, you know, the defensive coordinator obviously is the guy that is, you know, responsible for everything and is taking care of installing defenses and all that. So I'm not saying he was like a huge part of it, but they were the number seven pass defense in Cleveland in 2019. So, yeah, I mean, I think maybe he's one of these bright young minds. I mean, look, think about it last year. Where you didn't, nobody had heard of Andy Dickerson or Shane Waldron, you know, some of these young guys that are just football junkies. They're kind of like, you know, a lot of these guys are like, if you've read Education of a Coach, you know that Bill Belichick is like a 10-year-old was going out and charting plays while I think his dad coached.
Yeah.
He had something to do with, was it Navy, maybe?
Yeah, it was one of the service academies.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Navy or Army, I guess. I know it wasn't Air Force. So, but, yeah, that, these are those kind of guys. They're football junkies that start off from, you know, a really young age, and he's 43 years old. So, like we were talking about Desai, he's 38. I mean, these guys are football junkies. They love it. They've been around it their whole lives. He's been around it since 2000, basically. So, yeah, he's got a lot of experience, and I think it's just, heck, if I was Pete, and I don't know what you would do, Bob, I would interview as many guys as I could. I would try to get in. You know the Seahawks are going to do that because they're that way with players. They will be in on every single thing. I always bring up they were one of the – I don't even know if other teams brought Colin Kaepernick in. You know, there was you know, when you look at all these trades and, you know, the thing this week or this year with Stephon Gilmore, you know, they were in on that. Absolutely. Yeah. They're in on everything. So I think you'd definitely be that way. And you never know how it, you know, clicks, but I guarantee you Pete's sitting there just having conversations about their theory and, you know, how they think and, you know, just personality, how they get along with players, all that stuff matters.
I think what I like about this is that they're continuing, the names are popping up from outside. And I guess there are only so many names or maybe only one name inside that could pop up, and it has in Clint Hurt. So, but I just like that, hey, we haven't just settled on the guy because he's in our building and he was going to run things the way I want it run. And, you know, no, that they're looking out, and there's familiarity with Donatell and obviously Gus Bradley, another name that was mentioned. But, you know, Desai is a guy that's got no association. Witt, a loose association only because he was connected to Dan Quinn, who was then connected to the Seahawks. So, you know, a loose association there. I just like that they're exploring outside, that they're not dead set on it's got to be somebody in the building who I know is going to basically be, you know, my puppet. You know, I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but just they're going to do what I say. They know what I expect, and I'm not going to get any blowback. I like the idea of somebody coming in, maybe saying, hey, Pete, you know, I know this is what you've done here with the D-line or with the cornerbacks or your coverage. Here's what I would do based on the personnel you've got. I would love that. And I assume Pete is open to that. I mean, maybe it just opens his eyes to, you know, sometimes it's hard to be objective when you're in the middle of it, when you're on the inside, and it takes an outside perspective to tune you into something maybe you've got a blind spot to. And maybe he's like, hey, have you ever considered this? This guy does this really well, and maybe you use him this way, or this group. You know, I think if I were in charge, here's how I would run this coverage, or here's how I would, you know, use my linebackers, whatever it is. I just think having that outside voice, even in an interview situation, is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah, I wonder how much film they're watching, too. I'll bet you it's a lot, you know, and I'm sure Pete just goes, hey, say whatever you want. I'm not thin-skinned here. Tell me what. Like, remember the show or the play I was talking about at San Francisco yesterday or 2 days ago where it was a double pass and people were yogging?
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
I mean, if he got in there and put the pointer on that and said, well, I'd fix that.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not sure what he's doing here.
Yeah. But really quick, these football junkies, I was talking about these guys. When I took a trip to Philly in 96 trying to get a job there, and the guy that came up to me, I'll never forget, he was a special team coach or assistant. It was John Gruden. And he comes up to me and he goes, hey, so what are you guys doing out there in Denver? What kind of defense you got out there? What's going on there? And I was like, I don't know. We run a 4-3. We do this and that. A lot of times I had force from the middle linebacker position, which I thought was goofy. You know, but he was just like, he was one of those guys that just could talk football all day long. That's what, I guarantee you, that's what Joe Witt is all about.
Coming up, we don't know what will happen with the MLB lockout, obviously, but there's still one major reason to be excited about the Mariners season coming up. We'll talk about it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Paul Moyer will join us on the program. You never want to miss that conversation. Does that make you nuts, the big grand introduction for him, Dave? Because I know you think it goes to his head. You're the guy that has to deal with him outside of these conversations. Does it really alter his perception of himself?
No, I don't think so. I think it's funny. I think it's really funny, and Paul gets a kick out of it. That was a really funny promo, that conversation you guys were having. Where you're like, yeah, I'm wagging my tail, and he's like,
oh yeah, he said I'm like a puppy dog.
Yeah, they ran that as a promo. You're like, well, I get you a treat next time.
I'm a good boy. So Paul will join us at the top of the hour. But as we told you at the opening of the show, really some really cool feedback on our conversation with Mitch Haniger yesterday. Again, if you missed that conversation, it is up on the podcast page for you at 710sports.com. Or if you're on Twitter, I tweeted out the link at Bob Stelton on Twitter or at Wyman and Bob on Twitter. The links are there for you. But just some really, really good stuff with him outside of, hey, what's it like to hit a baseball? What's that? Well, that's got to be cool, huh? So outfield, huh?
Remember when you made that play out in right field? That's what I would have asked him.
Yeah. he's a deep, insightful guy. And you really got to look at what it is that he puts, how seriously he takes his career and what he's gone through and just sort of addressing everything that's gone on with him. But one of the things that that kind of stood out, I mean, just in the way of a guy that's not a media guy, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He's not out in the press. He's not a big endorsement guy or anything. He's kind of to himself, but he wrote that Players Tribune article, which is fantastic. A really good conversation with him yesterday. He seems like he's morphing into a leader, especially with Seager gone now. That void needs to be filled. And I know J.P. Crawford said, hey, I'm ready to step up and do it, which I think is great. I don't think it needs to be one guy and nobody else can lead. I mean, the more, the merrier, the better. And he's a perfect guy, in my opinion, based on his age. He's 31 years old. He's been through the rigors of injuries, success, failure. He's got credibility, I think, with young guys. And the idea that it feels like he's kind of morphing into that leader is pretty cool. And in this cut here, he's just talking about, you know, as far as the team goes and everything, the way they're building. And it's kind of what we were talking about with the Seahawks. You've got to capitalize when you've got the chance.
Robbie Ray signing and the Adam Frazier trade were definitely two impact moves that we made that are setting ourselves up to for it to be a good offseason. You know, I think we still need some more big upgrades, and I know, you know, adding a couple more players should put us over the top. And I think this game is really difficult. It's really difficult to win a World Series, and I think when you have that timing and that window of young prospects that are should be ready soon, but also guys that we need, guys that come in that can produce this year.
And then just kind of following that one more from him, Dave, where he just said, you know, yeah, good prospects, that's great, but having good prospects isn't enough, especially this year.
Although we have great prospects that I'm looking forward to, you know, putting on the Mariners uniform, they still are unproven. And I think the more guys that we can get with a steady track record of playing against the best and the best in the world at the MLB level, the better. And then we supplement those prospects in with those guys. And I feel like that's our best chance of success.
So he kind of echoes what we've talked about a million times, Dave, in that, yeah, it is awesome to hear about Julio Rodriguez and Kirby and Hancock and Marte and all these names down there. And you get excited about who they're going to be and what they're going to be. There's such a huge bust rate in baseball. It just is the way it is. It just, some guys, they may make it to the big leagues, and then they're guys. They're, you know, they're filling spots on a roster, or some turn into superstars. Some do pan out, but not all of those guys are going to pan out. Not all of them will. It's just not how it goes. And him saying, you know, yeah, that's great, but they haven't proven anything yet. And he's talking about guys with a resume, guys that have done it against the best of the best. And we've talked about that a bunch.
Yeah, and I like how he says it very kind of bluntly. He's like, they're unproven.
Yeah.
Which everybody knows, and not everybody is willing to say. So, I like the sort of message that he is sending. And, you know, I didn't want to – I really did want to ask him this, but we were on a, you know, more serious topic. But I wanted to ask him if people recognize him when he walks around Seattle. I mean, I know not everybody's locked down and everything, but
yeah,
I'm curious because now he's up for Seattle Sports Star of the Year, and I'm just thinking in, you know, ahead that this guy could be one of these iconic athletes here in Seattle. He has the recipe for that. And boy, I just feel like he really, I don't want to say came out swinging, but like, you know, that article is like him. I mean, it kind of, when we interview him, he's very matter of fact about things and very blunt. And as far as a leader goes, you know, there's different kinds of leaders, and he can be the guy who is that rock. You know, mm-hmm. I think when I was in college, you know, that was really the only time when I was playing at Stanford. There was like twice where I spoke up, where I got up in front of the whole team and I was like, hey, we got to focus on the game because there was some other stupid thing going on with the stupid band and us going to Tokyo and all that. And I guess they were taking
stupid band.
The Japanese government was paying for the band to go. And we only got to take like 60 guys of our 90, and they really deserved to go. But some guys, so everybody's fighting it and going, what about this and what about that? And, you know, there's this big team meeting, and finally I just stood up and I'm like, guys, we're going over there to kick Arizona's ass, okay? This is a bowl game for us. And that, and then, you know, that was the only thing I think I ever said.
Did you kick their ass?
We did. We upset them. Yeah, we beat Arizona.
They were inspired by your speech, clearly.
In Tokyo. I don't know about that, but I was like, hey, come on, let's get back. You know, and so you can be – I wasn't very vocal at all. So, but I think, you know, you lead with your tough – I mean, we're pretty similar as far as overcoming an injury that mm-hmm. was as bad as it gets and, you know, didn't have very good odds. So, you know, there's some respect in that. But I just love this guy, and I was looking at his numbers. You know, he ended up batting .253. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just seemed like he always had hits, Bob, that were timely.
Yeah, yeah. Look what he did at the end of the season. Look at the tear he went on. I mean, his career year, 39 home runs, 100 runs driven in, and just look at, you know, if you go to his game log and look at what he did during the most crucial time.
Right.
You know, especially in that final series. Yeah, it didn't go their way, but he had that game where he drove in five. Went 4 for 5. I mean, he was a monster, and he was a leader with his production. He's even keel. That's the other part, I think, is, you know, it's good to have an emotional leader, a guy who's going to yell and scream and really be, you know, animated. But he's also, I think it's also good to have a guy who doesn't get too high or too low. Just think about Mitch Haniger. His expression never really changes. You know, if you look at him, you wouldn't know if he hit a home run or if he struck out. Yeah. He's kind of got the same expression, which I think is crucial in 162 games, kind of letting people know, listen, man, this is a long ride. You can't get that, be that extreme one way or the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Coming up. We're wagging our tails in excitement for this guy is what Lefko just wrote.
I wonder what kind of a treat he's going to bring for you, Bob.
I'm going to be panting, just waiting anxiously at the microphone here for the arrival of Paul Moyer, who will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.